accession number 28676, Mr. Jack Ball, Reel 9. Now, we're sort of going through the logbook now, looking at specific raids as opposed to the general history. Now, we've got it as far as the double Duisburg raid on the 14th of October. What's the next sequence of events you remember from raids?
We did a series of raids on the Ruhr and the Rhineland, Essen, Cologne again. They were sort of mixed, daylight and night time. So we did four raids between the 25th and the 31st, so five raids actually. So it was quite a busy time.
And what was the character? Was the Ruhr's got a reputation? What did you find it like?
Well, there were lots of searchlights there, and lots of guns, of course, and so the barrages were particularly good. On one of these daylight raids, I remember, I think it was about the 23rd of October, something like that, we went in a gaggle, which is a conglomeration of aircraft, two in the lead with painted tails, and the rest sort of formed up behind them. So it was a loose formation, you could say. And I think we were instructed to throttle back. No, the leaders were instructed to throttle back as they approached the target so they could merge into the rest of the stream and not be picked out by the German gunners. Unfortunately, the best laid plans of men, everybody else throttled back at the same time, and so we went very slowly over the target. We had a very good picture of the bridge at that time, I think.
Which bridge?
One of the Cologne bridges. Was a big hole in it. When we went to Dusseldorf in November, and we came to an operation against Bochum, which B-O-C-H-U-M.
And what day was that?
That was the 4th of November.
Now, what was so special about, well, what stood out about that raid?
It was very heavy defences. Lots of aircraft going down in flames. I shall always remember it, I think. And people were falling in flames all over. And there's lots of searchlights and lots of anti-aircraft fire.
What was it like to see an aircraft? I know it's a crude question in many ways, but
it was terrible. Really, it's a horrible sight. The whole aircraft appears to be in flames. And I lost a very good friend there who, one of those I'd been together with. And his whole crew were killed. And one of them was a young lad, coloured lad from Mauritius. He was about 19 years old or something. Very nice lad. But they were lost there. Then we went on to...
When you had bad casualties like that, how did squadron morale stand up, and indeed your own morale, you know?
Well, you took it for granted that this was going to happen, you know. I don't think it caused their morale to drop, as far as I'm concerned. You expected it, and you're just lucky, or just consider yourself lucky that it wasn't you. And after that, we went on to two or three oil targets.
This is oil refineries.
Oil refineries, yeah.
And where were they? Or scattered about?
They were scattered about. Van Eickel was an oil target. Gelsenkirchen was an oil target. We were, that was a daylight, and we were the leading squadron in the gaggle. And I remember running in alongside a pal of mine. And when we came out, I couldn't see him. He'd put his tail up, I guess, and gone for home, which was a normal thing in those days. There was one of these raids, I forget which one actually, where the aircraft in front of us and below us was hit, and it started to stream smoke, etc., or glycol, and clearly one engine was put out, and I counted three people bailing out. We took a note of the, I asked the everybody to count them because it was important to see what happened. And it wasn't one of our squadron, curiously enough. I don't know where he'd come from. But there were three aircraft, three bailed out, and the pilot was obviously sticking with it, and the rest of the crew were sticking with it, as it would be expected, quite frankly. The snag was that if the aircraft was hit, the three down in the nose, that's the bomb over the engineer, and possibly the wireless operator, would bail out, they would be the first to bail out, and because they were handy for the escape hatch, which was too small. And
were you conscious the escape hatch was too small?
Not at the time. Yeah, it was small, but I figured I'd get through it in an emergency.
So what happened to the other three? Did they get back, or?
I don't know. They weren't our squadron, so I don't know what happened to them. I took it that they would get back. The aircraft was flying straight and level at the time and pressing onto the target. So we did those three oil targets, or four oil targets, and then we were switched to close support for the American First Army, and we raided a place called Dueren, D-U-E-R-E-N, which was I think the target was actually a dam, but, so we went in quite low, and that's where on the bombing run, with loads going down alongside us, I was hit on the head by I've got fortunately a photograph of it. It was
just explain what it. This is on now. What's the date? 16th of November, or is it December by then?
November 16th. Yeah.
Now, tell me exactly what happened, and tell us the story. It's a bomb arming pistol, or it's.
Oh, that's what I call it. Yeah.
Tell me what happened then. What exactly happened as far as you were?
Well, we was on the run up to the target, and. I had the impression that an aircraft had blown up in front of me. But the Germans used what we called scarecrow rockets, which exploded in a great mass of smoke, etc. And after the war, they denied using them. But we saw them. I think... They were definitely going. This thing blew up, or seemed to blow up, and seconds later I got hit on the head.
So it come through the windscreen, had it, or just...
It come through the roof of the cockpit, the plexiglass roof, which was quite thick. But fortunately, you know, it was made of aluminium, and I had a helmet on, a leather helmet on, and so it just momentarily dazed me, I think. Anyway, I was a bit confused, and I looked down, and I thought I saw the navigator's head lying on the floor, but fortunately it wasn't. He the whole cabin had the roof of the cabin had sort of disintegrated, and it was getting quite drafty, but we continued on the bombing run, and as I say, there were loads, you know, people had taken further altitude, and there were quite a lot of stuff falling past us at the time. So whether
now this was a bomb arming pistol, that was from a British bomb.
Yeah.
So it from an airplane that had blown up or something above. Or
yeah. It had either blown up or they dropped it early, and that was quite a risk. When you saw daylight raids, there was a lot of stuff falling down past you, you know. So it was. I presented the thing to where I've been stationed in Canada. It was a very good museum there, and
it's the Canadian Warplane Heritage Museum.
That's right.
Home.
Yeah. It's in Ontario, actually.
Now, had it damaged you much?
Only the cockpit roof.
Your head?
No. I wasn't even cut, quite frankly. The leather helmet had protected me enough.
So that was the 16th of November, 44?
Yep.
On the raid of Douran?
That's right. We were attacking in support of the... close support of the American First Army, and after that we went back to the oil targets again. Van Eickel and Dortmund.
These are all refineries again.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And daylight raids, or
a mixture of both.
What's the next one you really remember? I appreciate it's difficult to recall them all. There's so many of them.
Oh, it wasn't the dam. Sorry. We went to the URF dam later on. URFT. Near Duran.
So the same area.
Yeah, same area, yeah. And we brought the bombs back from there because the master bomber told us not to drop. It was obscured by cloud or something. Then we had a bunch of Karlsruhe oil targets, Essen, the factory there. And then Mannheim, Ludwigshafen. I remember it was a bright moonlight night. And we got there early. The winds must have been...
What date was this?
That was 15th of December.
And what happened to you?
We got there early, and I had a substitute rear gunner on board. I think he was Canadian. And... we'd been warned that there was a prisoner of war camp just in front of the target. So I told the time, and to give it a fraction of a second. Past the target, unfortunately, because we hit a ploughed field. So I think that was a bad mistake on my part. It was a very moonlit night, as I say, and the bomber stream was clearly visible by the contrails that we left.
Now, what's a contrail?
You see them in the sky.
It's just a smoky.
It's
water vapor or whatever.
It's water vapor generally. So we were leaving a considerable amount of water vapor behind. And the next one which stands out in my memory is Ulm, which was a long, very long...
ULM?
ULM, yeah. Had the highest church spire in Germany, I think, in Europe.
What day was that?
That was 17th of December.
What do you remember of that one?
Well, we went in, for us, quite a low level, 11,000 feet. And...
this is a night raid?
Yeah, it was a night raid, sorry. And I had another Canadian rear gunner this time.
And why do you remember the raid on Ulm?
Mainly because of the church spire. we were warned about it previously. They said, don't knock it down. And I don't know whether anybody looked out for it, but at the height we were operating at 11,000 feet, I don't think anybody could see it, actually. But presumably it was away from the aiming point. Then we went to Bonn on the night of the 21st, and we were diverted to Sturgate.
During that raid?
After that raid, on the way home, we were diverted to Sturgate, which had a Fido, the petrol burners alongside the runway. Are you familiar with it?
Well, tell us about it. Yeah.
This created the petrol burners or oil burners alongside each side of the runway, and they made a sort of tunnel through the fog, which was very thick that night. So
FIDO.
FIDO. It's an acronym, for fuel ignition dispersal, something like that.
What was it like landing?
It was very good, but it was a lifesaver, quite frankly, because there was no way you could get down otherwise.
You didn't have one at your own airfield.
No, they were few and far between. But you could see them from miles away. The reflection of them, and they formed a sort of cumulus cloud above the fog, actually. So you could pinpoint on that.
And this was at Sturgate.
Sturgate. That's this one. It's It's near Lincoln. Yeah. Sturgate. And I always remember that trip because they took us. They weren't particularly prepared for us. They couldn't care less, quite frankly. You had to go and look for an empty bed, and you just walked through the huts and really found an empty bed. That's what it amounted to. So it wasn't the best organized places, but it was a wartime aerodrome. It's still around.
That was the 21st of December.
21st of December, yeah. And on the 26th, on the 24th, I was sent to recover the aircraft. All the pilots were sent, I guess. And we did a Fido takeoff. I mean, the fog was still around, but we got back to our base with the aircraft. And then on the 26th, the fog cleared, and we went to St. Vith, V-I-T-H.
Where's that? That's Germany.
That's in Luxembourg, actually. Oh. It was to do with the weather had cleared, and you know the weather had been pretty bad over that Christmas, and we were able to intervene in the Battle of the Bulge, what it amounted to. The panzer concentrations had broken through, and St. Vith was one of their rail, it was a big rail junction, I think, and we could see it quite clearly, and I think we gave it a pretty good pounding. But some of the aircraft landed away at Fiskerton. And we went over to Fiskerton to collect the aircraft. I took about five or six crews over, crammed into the aircraft, and we brought them back, the skeleton crews, you know, three or four in each one, and we flew the aircraft back, and we got commended by the CO for that, because it was they'd been bombed up while we were away, and they, of course they were pretty heavy. And then we finished up.
Well, do you have any Christmas celebrations the night before? I know, but I mean, was there any, or was it just muted in view of the fact you're?
I think, I seem to remember having a beer or two.
But nothing excessive?
Nothing excessive, no. I don't think anybody.
Now, are you getting near the end of your tour now? I'm not too good at counting.
We're coming to...
I mean, it's just... Was it? Did you know it was a certain number of flights? Or?
Oh, yeah, sure.
How many was it?
The system was that you had to get every member of your crew up to 30 flights. And so I did 33, actually, but that was because, you know, members of the crew had been sick, or the rear gunner had been under the weather.
How did you feel as you got nearer the end of your tour? Because some people got more edgy, you know, just... because they've almost made it. how did you feel as you approached the end of your tour?
I don't think... just a question of relief. Everyone you got under your belt was the same thing. January 45, of course, we finished up on three night raids.
And so what were they?
They were quite... very long ones, actually. I think nearly 9 hours.
Do you remember them separately or
altogether? I remember one particularly, the two particularly.
Which one first?
We did three, as I say, and the second, the 14th, and the 16th. The second one was to Meshberg-Leuna. It was an oil target. And that's where I went round again, actually.
Now tell me about that. What happened?
Well, we got there early and waiting for the markers to go down. I did a circuit and you know, around the target as far as I could, and just hope for the best sort of thing. And when we came back on the heading, the target indicators went down, and so we were in the right place at the right time, which was mainly what you worried about, I think. It was a very bad flak there, and the fighters were active, according to my logbook here. I don't remember.
You wouldn't see them, presumably.
No, I hope not. I don't recall whether the gunners reported any at that time, but we probably saw flares. They would drop flares above the bomber stream. So we would be well aware of their presence, quite frankly.
So that was on the 14th of January?
That was on the 14th, and I finished on the 16th on an oil target, Zeitz, Z-E-I-T-Z, which was another long trip. And the fighters were very active there. And
that's on the 16th?
That's on the 16th of
January. Anything you remember about your last raid?
Not a lot, quite frankly. I've got a note here that there were a lot of explosions, and the fighters were active. We were a PFF a Pathfinder supporter that night. Which
what does that mean?
That means that you go in fairly early and drop flares, apart from the bombs. You drop a string of flares to light up the target.
Based on the flares that the actual Pathfinders had dropped, I presume? Or would you actually be going in?
These were sort of parachute flares. They weren't... they may have been, I don't know, I can't recall this time, whether they were target indicators or not. They may well have been. But generally they were restricted to the Pathfinder types.
And how did you feel when it was all over? Any celebrations the last raid?
Yes, not the celebration. No, there were no celebrations, particularly at the last raid. We always threw a dinner for the ground crew, etc.
Tell me about that. That was as a mark of appreciation.
Yeah, sure. I invited all the ground crew and. Our boys were there, and
what kind of a do was it?
It was a local pub, a dinner at a local pub. We had a room to ourselves, and it was fairly beery, I suppose. Louth wasn't a great place to celebrate, quite frankly. But, you know, it was a pub. And we had a good time. And then we had a photograph taken under the aircraft, but one of the guys was missing, I think. The rear gunner was missing. I don't know where, what had happened to him. That last op, the 16th, was where I lost another good friend, on 101 Squadron, which was down the road. He was the only one lost that night, and I didn't know this at the time, of course, but I've since found out that he was the only one lost, and that was he went down to near the Czech border, I think. But that was it.
That must have cast a bit of a pole. Have you heard that?
Well, I didn't know at the time, quite
right,
frankly.
Okay.